You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, Series 9, Episode 12, coming your way this week. Kieran Burke and Gary Riley with you as ever. We're brought to you by our sponsor, Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lighting and AV solutions. And it sounds like there could be some interesting news to come out of Athlone Town over the next couple of days. I'm sure we'll touch on that as we make our way through the pod. But once again, some incredible games played across the League of Ireland last week in the two divisions. So we'll be looking through those very, very shortly. We've got two great guests on this week's pod as well, as promised last week. We have got Paddy Kavanagh joining us to look at Bo's recent revival. And we are also going to be hearing from Shane Keegan, a former First Division winner, and he's going to give us the lowdown on what's been happening in the First Division. But that's all still to come. Gaz, how was your weekend?
Not great. Got through it. What about yourself?
Yeah, not much better. Started all right Friday. I had a few days off last week. Was going down to the Longford game this Saturday against Dundalk. So Friday I went down, went to the races in Kilbeggan with the Owl Boy. Backed a few winners. That was a good day out. Saturday then, town game started well, ended badly, so it was not in good form then when I woke up Sunday. And as you'll probably know, Gaz, Kira's family are all massive Liverpool fans, so as we were driving back to Dundalk on Sunday, she decided to announce in the car, oh, we're just going to stop in here to one of the local pubs, they're all in watching the Liverpool game. And I was like, I have absolutely no interest in doing that. I was in the worst of form. I think me and you spoke about this before, like, I thought we'd got to the stage where I had stopped letting team results affect my entire mood for the week. But like, I don't know what it was about that Longford performance on Saturday. I was really down in the dump Sunday. And the last thing I wanted to do was go into a pub rammed full of people wearing Liverpool jerseys, right? So I went into this pub and the place is head to toe in Liverpool jerseys. They're already winning 3-1 by the time we get in there. Like, there's Liverpool scarves and flags on the roof. Then I turned the corner and I'm like, right, I might as well order a pint here to make this somewhat bearable. Turned the corner and what's on the table? A fake Premier League trophy, like one of these really well-designed ones, like not an owl inflatable yoke, like, you know, one of these things you rent out for the day, like.
Oh, right. Get that?
I don't know. Apparently, this wasn't the only one in Dundalk. Apparently, a couple of the pubs had these. So, full-time whistle goes, there's people crying and running up and kissing the television screen and kissing each other, grabbing the fake Premier League trophy and kissing it. And I was just like, get me out of here quick. I've seen hell and I do not want to go back, my friend.
Yeah, that's fairly emotional now, it has to be said. I don't really even know what to make of that. Like, I don't even know how you'd go about finding a replica Premier League trophy, particularly in a, you know, foreign country.
Well, of course, Dublin is the closest capital to the Premier League champions.
Yeah, so I see. But yeah, look, you know, it's...
I thought there was going to be a bank holiday on Monday, to be honest, in Ireland.
Well, it's like I said to someone over the weekend, it's like, you know, being a big fan of Roy Cropper. Like, you know, it's just a television programme, like, for the vast majority of people in Ireland. Like, I don't like Phil Mitchell, but I really like Roy Cropper. Like, it's... I don't get it, like, but look, each of their own, let them at it. I wouldn't be going to a pub now to celebrate, you know, my favorite television program team winning something, but look, let them at it, people. You know, I suppose to be very, maybe I'm getting more mellowed out, but like, you know, life's hard enough, a lot of shit going on. People have a piss up for some reason if they want. That'll do.
Yeah, so look, as I said, we've got two great guests to come on the show tonight, Shane Keegan and Paddy Kavanagh. Let's start with Paddy's former club. I think they're probably the story of the week, are they, Gary? Bowes, this remarkable turnaround from a team that couldn't hold their pace to a team that can't stop winning 3 in a row.
Yeah, it's mad. Very surprising result this. I think while it's great that Boas are winning, I've actually managed to put together a few wins on the trot against...
More wins than anyone in the league now, would you believe?
Boas?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is mad. But also, you know, shows like they've been not in a lot of games either. But anyway, I think this is obviously a huge result for them. It has to be said, there's really exciting ending to the game. I do want to point out the defending from Pats was
absolutely highlighted the Pats defending in recent weeks on the pod. I think you were a bit miffed, a bit surprised. And I kept saying, like, I'm watching a lot of games and I'm seeing Joe Redmond trying to hold off four lads on his own. Was it the look at the equalizer? Who is
insane?
How is he there? How's Rob Cornwell, wasn't it? How is he stood there unmarked?
I can't explain it. I nearly couldn't believe the goal. I nearly couldn't believe what I was watching when I saw the equalizer go in on Friday. I was like, this can't be real. Like, obviously a huge result for them, but like
a lot of criticism from Pats fans for Kenny's tactics on Friday, it has to be said.
Yeah. Look, I didn't see enough of it to really say much on that, but like I think the piece around like the defending and not able to clear the ball for the winner, you know, that's just not good enough. I know there was a huge shout for a penalty. I thought Tierney was absolutely massacred in the box and the referee waves play on. That was a stonewall penalty for me. But, you know, after that, I think, you know, Pats will be kicking themselves. To give away goals like that is just not on. And when you're trying to win a Premier Division title, you can't be pissing away goals like that. It's very, very poor stuff.
Yeah. Just sticking with Boas for a minute, because this is a remarkable turn of events from a team that were under so much pressure. The manager was under so much pressure. I noticed something watching back the highlights today on this game. They went in 1-0 down and they went down the tunnel. There was no boos. They were being cheered on by the supporters in the Jody going down the tunnel. And then they start the second half really well. And if you're watching the highlights, 52 minutes, they have a chance. And the eruption of noise from the Jody, it's as if they scored a goal in that moment of time. The fans really, really got behind them. That come-from-behind victory against Rovers, and now this come-from-behind victory against Pats. I'm not saying it eradicates everything that's gone before. We've spoken before about, say, the win against Cork. They won, but it wasn't convincing. And all we felt it was doing was just biding Reynolds, maybe an extra week or two. But all of a sudden, he actually has some serious momentum and support behind them. Now, again, the fear always is if they go on a run of 2, 3, 4 games without a win, we go back to where we were. But at this moment in time, there's a real swell of support and a real feel-good factor about Boas again all of a sudden. So it's going to be interesting. Look, their next game is Waterford, and it'll be absolutely classic Boas if that's the game they lose. I know Waterford had a great win the other night against Derry, which we'll get to, but Boas should be beating Waterford at the moment as things stand. So if they don't, they're back to square one. But the sudden change of feel around the whole place is incredible to know.
Yeah, it is. I think, though, while being really negative about everything, it doesn't eradicate what went on before.
No.
You know, and I don't think, like, let's say, for example, he's won 4 out of the last 5 games, or Boas have won 4 out of the last 5 games, but before that, they had won 1-6. You know, and 2-7, like if you're going back to the start of the season. So, like, I think, like, it's just quieting down the Rennie out folk rather than eradicated them. And is this like a change that is going to stick? Obviously, remains to be seen, but I don't think they're hardy enough to go and do that. I think it'll probably turn as the summer goes on. But it remains, you know, very likely to be completely wrong, as I am quite regularly, but I just don't see enough of a change. Now, one thing, and just while I say that, I'm going to contradict myself immediately. One thing I was very critical of was like the heart and the identity and the feeling and the vibes and all the rest of that. They have recovered some of that. There's no question about that. As you mentioned, as it went off at halftime, 1-0 down, the fans got behind them. They were appreciative of the effort that was being made. And I think that was probably missing when they were on that bad run. So very likely, you know, obviously a huge result. They have to back it up now again against a team that, well, Waterford haven't announced a new manager, have they?
No, not yet.
No, not yet. I'd probably be waiting for some fella to get some time off from Fleetwood. So, you know, who knows when that'll happen. But I think they need to go and back this up now, put a bit of a run together, which I know they've made a great start at that.
Yeah, we'll be talking more about Bowes in a little while when Paddy joins us on the show. Move on to speak about Waterford, still without a manager, but they have a 2-1 victory against Derry City the other night. Derry, just when it looked like they were turning a corner, it's a typical case with them of a step forward and two steps back.
To a degree, yeah. I just thought, I'm not entirely sure if they're fit for it. Like, some of the goals that they conceded were quite poor. I thought Maher was all over the place.
Yeah, a few comments from Derry fans online that they feel he needs a little spell on the bench.
Who's the subkeeper though? Do you have a clue?
Not off the top of my head, I'm not going to lie. I'll have to give it a quick
Google. No, neither do I, but like I would say, he's the main keeper, let's say, or one of the top keepers in the league, so we're told. I've often questioned that. I don't think you were ever 100% gone on him. He's good, but like I don't think he's, like I'd put an ang above him. I'd probably put, well, the last, from this season anyway, I put Luke Dennison above him. I think, you know, there's other keepers in the division that are bailing their teams out, as I've often said. I don't think he's doing that enough, and he's not even there on Friday. You saw a bit of helter skelter going on when he wasn't commanding enough in certain situations, which caused problems for Derry. But they weren't good in the night at all.
Arlo Doherty was the subkeeper the other night, by the way, a lad that they signed from Leicester in the off season, only a 21-year-old, so no experience as such.
Well, they must have some faith in him if they got him in from Leicester. But yeah, look, I think it's, I don't really know what to make of that. Like, it's not going to be easy to replace. Like, I'm not saying that he needs to be replaced or anything like that, but like, are you going to make that change? As you mentioned, some people were saying putting him on the bench for a little while, fine, but what are you replacing him with? You know, is Doherty miles away from Maher? Remains to be seen, but I think you're right. As you said, a couple of steps forward, a couple of steps backwards. Not putting together enough. In a short space of time, if you contrast that with Bowes, they've lost 6 games already this season, and you know it was dire straits. But they put a few wins together and puts them up the table, puts a whole new face on it. They're probably the most formed team in the league at the moment as well. So, with Derry, like, are they progressing enough with the players that they've brought in? I haven't seen it yet. And that's a real concern. Like, Waterford managed to win. Like, I can't remember the last time Waterford won. And Derry come down and don't back up their couple of wins that they had before that. Particularly, like, a convincing one against Sligo. I know it's only Sligo, but they still bet the life out of them 3-0, and they were full value for that. But then go down to Waterford and, you know, get a consolation goal at the end. It's just not good enough. And I don't know, like, you think back to Higgins coming towards the end of his time with Derry at the end of last season. Not that handy of a job.
No, goes to show, not as easy as everyone makes out that it is. Just because you've got a bag of money, you have to know how to spend it and do it right and build a squad and build a feeling around it. And I think Derry are just lacking a little bit of something at the minute. On Waterford, as we said, still without a manager, the report suggests that discussions continue with Rory Higgins, and Stephen Rice's been lined up apparently as well as a possible man to go in there. I'd love to see Rice in the league sooner rather than later. I think he's, you know, they always say it's no guarantee that just because you're a good player, you're going to be a good manager, but he does appeal as one that has a real football brain about him. We know him a little bit from his time at Longford. We've had him on the pod here a few times. He's been in the international setup as well. He's been over in England at Palace doing coaching as well. So he's got a good CV, despite the fact he's never actually managed a senior team as of yet. So I would love to see him chucked in there and see.
It'd be a project I'd like to see, definitely. Yeah.
Right, moving on. Galway United 2, Drogheda United 1. The battle of the two Uniteds goes Galway's way. A really good game of football. And it was that man Moses Dyer again that was the difference maker. We put out a tweet last week on our X or Twitter account asking who was the best number 9 in the league. And there was lots of shouts for Moses Dyer. And look, he's only fresh into the league. So, he's got big reputations to go up against, players that have been there for a couple of years and done it. But 7 goals in 11, it's been a great start. These weren't the two prettiest goals. I mean, he scored some right bangers since he's come into the league. These were his two scrappiest goals, but they were just as important as anything he scored before.
Yeah, well, the second goal in particular was a really good header down. Like, it just crept by Luke Dennison in goals, but it was a well-worth goal. Well headed down, and Dyer was in the right place to get something on it. He got enough on it, and that made the difference. So a huge win for Galway. Put some level on points now with Drogheda at the top of the table. But a good one as well. I think it was a bit ropey at times there for Galway in the last little while. Like, they hadn't won a game in a while at home. So it was good to get this one, especially against the league leaders.
Yeah, Drogheda didn't play that badly at all. They had a couple of chances late on. I think there was a really good block on Warren Davis in injury time. Only their second defeat of the season. Now, they have faltered in the last couple of weeks, but they're still top somehow. It's very reminiscent of Shells last year, isn't it? Remember, Shells had that 7 or 8 or 9 match winless run, and every time you looked at the table, they still seemed to be there. It's obviously very early in the season for Drogheda to think about staying there for the rest of the year. But, I mean, performances continue to be impressive from Drogheda. Douglas James Taylor back on the pitch as well, which was a big boost. So,
but just even on that, if you look back at the results, we're saying the last few games, they went away to Drogheda, or went away to Derry and bet the life out of them. They had a good 2-2-2-0 draw at home against Shells.
Yeah.
And kept St. Pat's scoreless at home.
Yeah,
these are not bad results.
No, not at
by
all.
Any stretch. They just come out on the wrong side of this one away to Galway. So they're still extremely competitive.
They're away to Sligo next. That's a great chance to bounce back.
Absolutely. But not only that, like, I feel the more I look at and think about Drogheda, I think they're going to stay up that half of the table.
I do as well.
Season. Yeah.
I think there's still more to come from this Drogheda team, believe it or not.
Absolutely. Like, it'd be interesting to see what options they have during the summer, like regards
that's
loan players and stuff like that.
Well, they've got the relationship with Walsall, so they can bring players in. But like we've seen with Waterford, it's not always a guarantee that you're going to get these absolute ringers, as you'd like to say, coming over, and they're going to make the difference. But I mean, they've got a good pedigree of doing it in recent years. You just look at your mate Michael Taylor and all these other lads that they brought in from the UK. They've done well with that route so far. So look, if they can just add one, or if they can find a Harry Wood of their own or somebody like that, I mean, that could be
a couple of gems. Absolutely,
finishing in the top four, not finishing in the top four.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%.
I mean, they did it last season with Taylor coming in, and who was the other player they brought in on loan? I think Ahui came back on loan last season, didn't he?
Yeah.
And it was them two players that effectively kept them up. So. They've got form for it as such. But yeah, big, big win for Galway there in that one. Shamrock Rovers 2, Shells 2. This was the live game. I was racing Friday, so I was watching a little bit on the phone on the way home. But it looked a proper game of football. I watched back some of it as well today. And look, we always think of Shells have been this team that's set up to be hard to beat and not lose. But they actually went up there and they had a proper go at Rovers in the second half. Two teams had a proper pop off each other here, which was great, particularly would have been live on the telly.
Yeah, great, great game for the telly. I think I said nil all or something like that in my predictions. But good result for Shells away from home. I thought the defending from Rovers was quite poor for the goals. Not really impressed. Like I say, even the Meepo's goal, I nearly feel like Lopez just let it go. I know it wasn't the most pretty of goals, but Meepo get his knee on it and it rolls and it scuttles in. Whereas I don't understand why Lopez just didn't come and clear that away just to be sure. Wasn't really mad about that. But even like I'll say, there was a lot of, if looking back on the goals, like the defending was poor. Was it Healy that got the first goal?
Yeah, from range. Karen's be disappointed with that, won't he?
Honest to God, it was like he had like cinder blocks on his feet. He couldn't get, you know, he couldn't chop across, which was really strange to see. Like, he's not having a bad season exactly. So, and it wasn't that a lot of pace on the ball. It was nearly strange type of goal to concede. But
there's been a couple of goals in recent weeks to be disappointed with Cairns. Mm. Like, he's done so well since he's gone in there, but he's just had one or two lately.
Yeah, like, but if you look at Shells, like, across, you know, 12 games in, we're coming across it, we'll say, halfway through the second round, 7 draws.
Yeah.
Those are the games that, like, last year gave them a bit of a breathing space at the top of the table. Now, yes, they're a point behind, along with Pats and Rovers. So it's not exactly fatal, but you don't want to turn this into the odd win and drawing a load of other games.
Like, I think something interesting, you're talking about last year that they would have turned a lot of these into 1-0s last year, or they would have found a way to win these games.
Are you mentioning Paddy Barrett, are you?
I am. They conceded 27 goals throughout the entire season last year. They've already conceded 12 this season. I think you have to draw the line, the comparison that Paddy Barrett has been missing for a large number of games.
Yeah, it's not ideal. Like, they need to do something. Like, as you said, I'm not mad about Sam Bone.
I was just going to say that I didn't want to cut across you, but you've highlighted Bone, and he's not up to the level of Paddy Barrett.
I don't think so. And not.
There's no thinking.
No. I did that game last year in Talca, Shells against Derry, and I found him extremely poor that day, which kind of reinforced my view on him already. Really indecisive, not making the right passes going forward, not like leading out of the box or leading out of defence. He's definitely a miss, and as you said, I would say they've conceded more goals, but like, they can't turn they can't get the 1-0 wins if they're conceding goals.
That's because I think there's, I haven't actually looked in terms of goals at this time last year to now. Mm-hmm. I'd say they've scored more goals. That's just in my head. I think with Meepo there, they've got more threat. Boyd missed the game the other night. He'll be only miss a game or two at most. He could even be back next week. They've got goals coming from the midfield with Chapman. I think there's more goals in the team. I think the issue is that they're not keeping as many clean sheets, which those stats obviously prove.
Absolutely. Like, their last three games have been 2-2 draws.
Mm.
Each of the last three.
That's very un-Shells-like.
But it is, yeah. The goals that they're conceding, it has to stop, obviously. Same with every team. But it's something that, we'll say, Duff has managed to, we'll say, rectify their goal-scoring threat. But he hasn't been able to stop the goals going in on the other end either. So, yeah. I think they need Paddy Barrett back, but I think they need to find a better partner or backup to Paddy Barrett as well.
Yeah.
Paddy Barrett's like at the latter end of his career. How, you know, we'll say an injury that might keep a lad out for one game might keep Paddy Barrett out for two games, that type of thing. So yeah. I think there needs to be work done in the transfer market in that respect for Shells.
And finally, before we go and hear from Paddy Kavanagh, Sligo Rovers 1, Cork City 1. I think Tim Clancy will be absolutely furious with the young lad, Josh Fitzpatrick, for getting sent off so stupidly. They were 1-0 up at the time, 15 minutes to go, and then Francie Limboto gets a 90th minute equaliser after some good work again from Owen Elding, whose reputation is soaring by the week. But
certainly
if they have 11 men on the pitch, I know it's not always as black and white as this, but they probably don't concede that goal.
Well, look, it obviously changes the feel of the game and the flow of the game, gives that bit of hope into Sligo or any opponent. You know, you're 1-0 down, they concede or they get a lad sent off, and it's like, right, okay, we get that extra bit of space, we get that extra second on the ball to play a better ball in, and it paid off for them. But really disappointing from Cork. You can't be giving up these opportunities to beat the team right below you.
Are we looking at the bottom two here? Because there was very little between them. It wasn't a great game. I think Waterford, if they get the right man in there, I think they'll kick on. You're looking at Bowes, Derry above them. They're probably not going to get dragged into it. You wouldn't know in this league, but I think we could be about to see maybe a big split between Cork, Sligo and the rest of the league.
I agree. I think Owen Elding will continue to improve across the rest of the season.
And then probably sign for a League One team in the summer. That's usually what happens at Sligo.
I think they'll be able to hold on to him for the rest of the season just because of his age. I mean, let's say that happens and he stays fit and healthy and continues scoring a goal every three games or three or four games, anything at all. If he, you know, ends up and say, because I think it's five or six as it is at the moment.
Yeah, five goals, yeah.
If he has five goals, you know, if he ends up with 12 or 13 goals, which would be a huge result and a huge return for a young player like that, that could be the difference maker, because we have Keating out for the rest of the season, isn't it?
Yeah.
The other boy, Maguire, when is he back?
Sure on him.
Yeah, sorry, I thought it was talked about, but actually I think you're right. I don't think it was said. Where are the goals going to come from? I know they signed a lad there during the week, or last week, was it for the bank holiday game? And I don't know very much about him, but like, he was brought in as a striker. They need to start scoring goals. I would say Sligo are the second top scorers in the division. If they manage to stop conceding goals left, right and centre, which I think is something that is more resolvable by the manager, John Russell, then I think they're going to pip Cork to the ninth spot. But I do think you're right. They're the two teams at the bottom of the division.
Yeah, I'm looking at the two squads. I think Sligo have the slightly stronger squad than Cork as well. To be honest, I'm looking at the benches the other night and there's probably just slightly better options on the mentioned the Cork bench, so I think that's a lot of people seem to have Sligo as the favourites, but I think I'd have them
to go down.
Yeah, I think I'd have them just ahead of Cork, to be honest.
Oh, I completely agree. I think they're going to get out of it. To be quite honest, I think they'll be able to stop conceding goals. Then, with the way that they're scoring at the minute, I think they'll be able to put it out with the fire. Whereas I just have far more concern in Cork City. I know what you're saying, but I think John Russell will be able to make that change in the summer or on the training field. And
no, we kind of say
it hopefully every, reduce the goals they're conceding.
We say it every summer when there's two teams down there like this. We said the same with Dundalk and Drogheda last year. Whoever has the better window is probably going to stay up. Again, I referenced Drogheda's window last summer, the players they brought in, the impact they had. Dundalk had a terrible window where they lost a load of loanees, brought lads in that had no impact, and that was the difference in the end. So Sligo Rovers, Cork City, huge pressure on them going into the summer market. But that was the Premier Division results from over the course of the weekend. We're going to have a bit of a Premier Division review because obviously we're into the second series of games now. So let's go and hear from a man who's been covering plenty of action on LOI TV this season as a commentator, primarily at Bowes, which links in nicely with all the Bowes chat we've been having this week. Let's go and hear from Paddy Kavanagh on this week's Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Now, I am delighted to say we are joined on this week's show by former Bowes man, Paddy Kavanagh. Paddy, what's the crack?
How are we getting on, Ciarán? All's good. How are you?
Not too bad. Amazing turnaround the last, week or so at Bowes. Even when they won the game Good Friday against Cork, I don't think Bowes fans were maybe overly happy with the performance, and there was still, you know, a lot of fear going into these two Dublin derbies and two incredible fight backs, and all of a sudden they're on top of the world. They've won more games than anyone else in the Premier Division this season.
Stop. Remarkable turnaround, all right. Obviously, I'd done one or two of the games, and there was a bit of noise coming from the Jody, to say the least, around the manager and that. But I think I'd done games last year when Rennie had come in, and my initial thoughts on it were that he'd inherited Decky Devine's squad, and he needed to get rid of what I would have perceived as dead wood about the place. And from there, then, he had to be given a pre-season, and I think he could only judge him in July of this season to give him a fair crack at the whip to see where things are at. And if it's not right then in July, well then, look, you're in a July window and you have a chance to make one or two changes and move things along. But look, me personally, I had faith in the management team between Rennie, Stevie and Detzer. I think there's buckets of experience there. Get the right blend in the dressing room. They were hampered a bit with one or two injuries and bits and pieces that way. But yeah, to turn three wins into 9 points over a week, some going. The league is crazy as it is.
Unbelievable. We'll talk about that in a minute. There's only 3 points separating the top seven in the league. But just on Rennie, obviously, he's been under huge pressure. And it's clear, we spoke about this a bit last week, it's clear the players are still playing from not only from the performances, but young Rhys Brennan's interview last week as well, where he came out batting for the boss. So dressing room still behind him, it would seem.
100%. They're all there. Look, I spoke to a couple of them, and genuinely, there's a togetherness there within that group and resilience within that group. And that will only come from Rennie. Look, he's been around the league. He's hard as old boots. He's a tough character. So, and he knows the game as well. So that will come through in the team. And the likes of Stevie and Detz are in behind him as well. It'll start to reap the rewards now as the season kicks on.
Obviously, you were around a few different dressing rooms in your time as a player in the league. Were you ever in an environment where it was as pressurised as it has been at Bowes the last couple of weeks in terms of so much talk about the manager?
In terms of managerial talk, not really. I'd look at the Rovers' 2010 season was a pressure cooker to deliver and win the league. And I think there was a result against Sport and Fingal that we were beating 2-1 at the time. I think it was 2-1. And the lads had felt it that day. I'm sure it went all the way to the last game of the season that year. But that's the only real dressing room that I felt that there was major pressure in. Coming to Dalymount then, later years, the club was coming back from the ashes nearly. You know what I mean? The fans done what they done to get the club out of the hole it was in. And they just wanted to see players play for the jersey and play for the badge and see where it takes them. So, yeah, it's the demand that's there now in that dressing room. Look, you've heard about the wage bills and all the stuff that gets bandied about around that, but, like, there is an onus on that team now to perform and hopefully bring a bit of silverware to the club.
Aside from the feeling around the place in terms of a little bit of pressure being released now with these wins, what, as someone that's watching Bowes closely, what do you feel has actually changed on the pitch? I think a lot of people have pointed to Colin Whelan having a more major involvement now in recent games.
Well, he knows the league. He's been around the league. Obviously, had a couple of years of bad injuries there, but the focal point of the team, he's the one that'll take the ball in, lay it off, bits and pieces. Rossi and Devoy are really starting to fire on all cylinders as well. The spine of the team, a settled back four was a big thing. I think for the first seven games, they didn't have the same back four. Like seven or eight games, they didn't have the same back four. So getting something kind of settled in there, change a goalkeeper in the middle of it all could be a difference too. I wouldn't like to say bad about either, but the sense of Casper's come in and they've got four results.
Yeah, and you touched on Dawson Devoy and Ross Tierney there. They've really stepped up in recent weeks. I suppose that's what they were brought back to the club to do. They've been paid the big bucks. They're expected to be the difference makers, and we're starting to see that now in the last couple of matches.
The two of them, can be match winners. The energy that they have, and I suppose the technical and the quality bit that they have as well. And to be fair to Rossi, he's one of them where you'd fucking hate to have him playing against you, but when he's in your team, he's one of them that you love. He just gets about the place, puts pressure onto people, makes people make mistakes, and he can turn, I suppose, he chase down a bad ball and turn into a good one type thing, you know. So he's his energy about the place, brilliant. And obviously Dawson's technical ability, everyone knows what he's capable of, and he's leading, like he's wearing the captain's armband there at times as well, and he's really taking that on the shoulders and leading the team.
And just to flip to the other side of the coin, Pat's given away those two goals in the 90th minute and 97th or whatever it was. They're obviously well positioned. They've had a decent start, but have they underwhelmed slightly compared to the level of expectation? I know that they're not the ones that set that expectation, but everyone was talking about Pat's has been right up there as title contenders, and they still obviously are. But I'm not sure if they've maybe caught the eye as much as people thought they might.
No, I agree with you. I think, like, from the bookies' perspective, I think they went in as favourites for the league this year. Obviously, the finish that they had last year, everyone expected them to continue as they finished. But look, everyone else got to do their homework. I think teams have an element of knowing how to play against them. Pats are going to be open, free-flowing, attacking. Classic Stephen Kenny, get the ball wide, get it in the box, Keane being out is a miss for them at the moment. Obviously, he scored some big goals for them. So, underwhelmed to a certain degree, yeah. I'd say so. Like, they've got a hell of a budget and a hell of a squad there as well that isn't firing all cylinders, but they're still going well, as is multiple others.
Yeah, look, I suppose we'll get to the general league table. As I said, there's only 3 points separating first to seventh at the moment. Drogheda have obviously been the big surprise package. Galway seems to have kicked on from where they were last year. And then you've got Rovers and Shellers that are just, they're threatening, aren't they, to go on a major run of form where they could pull away from a few of the teams around them. But and then you've got Derry as well, another of your former clubs, who it's very difficult to know what to make of at this stage of the season.
Definitely. Well, look, Kevin Doherty's been around the league donkey's years, and he is a very capable manager, knows how to set up a team to play against the so-called bigger teams, and they've taken their chances, and you can't take that away from them. John Caulfield, same, proven league winner, got teams to cup finals, won cup finals, so he knows what he's no mug either. And then you've got the four Dubs sitting in behind him, and arguably none of the Dublin teams have got themselves up and going and got any kind of run of form. Bowes there last week, 3 wins in a week is one thing. And Derry were getting slaughtered as well at a certain poor start to the season that they had. But when you're sitting in seventh and 3 points off the top of the table, it's going to make for some interesting viewing over the next couple of months.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I just want to go back to Bowes, actually, because, again, you were in a lot of dressing rooms. I'm sure you came across a lot of players who you looked at and thought this lad could be an absolute ringer if he applied himself a bit more. And obviously there was so much talk about the Moose at the start of the year, and it just hasn't happened for him at all for whatever reason.
It hasn't happened, and that'll come down to either the Moose himself not applying himself correctly or him potentially underestimating the quality and the calibre in the league. It's a tough league to play in. Like, no point is given for free, and by God, every week you have to work your socks off to get in and out of a game. And it's only gotten better. The calibre and quality of players within the league now has gone tenfold as well. Like, there's some technically unbelievably good players, as well as really good defenders. And they know how to defend. They're hungry to defend and not concede goals. Same way some lads are hungry to score goals. The Moose hasn't hit the ground running. One or two moments where you can see he has ability, but to play for Bowes and to play up top for Bowes, need to be able to carry the burden. Like, there's Dinny Corcoran, goal machine for Bowes, Jason Bourne, you know what I mean? They're Glenn Crowe. Like, there's big names that have carried the burden to score goals for Bohemians, and he's not living up to it at the moment.
And like, those days are gone in the league, aren't they? You probably only go back 10, 15 years at most, and there was a lot of players in the league where they could get away with being 70, 80% fit and in peak physical condition because they were just so technically good. But those days are kind of gone in the league now. You have to be right at it or you're just going to get left behind.
100%. You need to be able to run and operate at 100 miles an hour, be it physically and technically. That's the only way you're going to excel within the league. If you're underperforming, you'll be found out fairly quickly. There's nobody, like, obviously we're talking, everyone's full time now, all the sports science that goes into it and everything that's there. Like, the teams are fit. Like, I don't think I've seen the league as fit in my time. Like, he has a bit to do. We'll be interested to see where he goes, but we'll wait and see.
What about the battle to stay in the league? Cork City and Sligo played out a draw the other day. They're right down towards the bottom. But is there anyone else that could get dragged into that? Or is it going to be a two-horse race to avoid that bottom spot?
It'll be interesting to see how Waterford get going now. Like, obviously, they're on the hunt for a manager. There was the rumour mill of Higgins going in down there.
Would that be a good fit?
Potentially. Look, I played with Higgins. Played a Rory up in Derry, and the man lives and breathes football, loves the game. Will he have control of the way things are supposed to be as a manager of a football club? We've heard the Fleetwood bits and pieces that are coming out of, they're just using the Waterford, I suppose, team as a feeder for themselves. Look, you're trying to manage a squad there essentially with your hands tied. That's what it feels like. So if he's willing to buy into that model, we'll see where it goes. But look, he's a really good manager, a great guy. So if he does go in, couldn't help but wish him all the best. But they could be dragged into that 10-9-8 positions that are there.
And I suppose Rory's spoken himself since he's left Derry about how maybe you know, the pressure of trying to win the title might have affected them a little bit towards the end, that he felt they were building a really good team, and then they kind of started buying players just for the sole purpose of, we need to go and win this league, and maybe those players didn't fit into the project the way it might have happened if he had took a more long-term approach. So it's a big, big decision for him, his next job, as you said, if there's other factors at play there about transfer policy and the likes, there's a lot for him to consider before he just jumps at another job.
Definitely. If he wants to get Waterford competitive, he needs, I think if he does get in there, he needs to get seasoned campaigners mixed with a bit of youth and quality around the squad to get them competitive. To have a fella come over on a bit of a long spell from England for a couple of months here and there, you won't be a fucking end, like, yeah, truth be told. You're at nothing. Getting him fit for getting a player fit to go back in the July window and see where he goes, you know, that's doesn't benefit either party, I don't think.
I took you away from my first question. Who do you fancy to finish bottom?
Oh, I would. It's hard to look past Sligo at the moment. Like John Russell, I think he's a good manager, but trying to get players out west, and he's dealing with a lot of young fellas as well. There mightn't be the experience to pull them out of the mire. I think I know we're talking very early doors here as well, but if you look at arguably from 7th to 1st, then it's hard to see them fall below Sligo. Say they'll have to win. A lot of games, turn the showgrounds into a fortress, and be a tough place to go. But teams can go there and get results as well. So.
Yeah, and I know Jessica Farry was at the AGM last night. She was tweeting out some really interesting stuff. I think the playing budget there, 700,000 or 800,000. The overall budget last year was 2.4 million. It just goes to show the money, the resources that just to stay in this division now. It's very, very difficult for clubs like Sligo, and particularly the teams in the first division trying to get up there to compete at all.
Sure, you have to get a fella up there first and foremost. Then get him accommodation, his wage, and whatever else goes with it. So it's a tough ask for a club that does so well with its own fundraising, and there's no sugar daddy in behind it all either. So it's look, John Russell has a hell of a job on his hands there to keep him in the division, I think.
And another of your former clubs, I don't know how much first division you're watching, but Bray are absolutely flying. But again, for any team aside from even Dundalk, if Dundalk go up like many people expect, trying to stay in that division and remain competitive when you're talking about figures like that, it's a massive, massive challenge for all 10 of those teams in the first division.
It is. Be fair to Killery, has a couple of experienced bodies in around the Dundalk team, like Wardy there, Darrell Horgan. They've been around the block, and they'll know what it'll take to win games and get the job done. Bray, on the other hand, they're fairly youthful, I think. Yeah. The young buck Billy O'Neill starting to play his role, bit of form there. I've heard good things about him. Can they hold on to him in the summer window as well? Will a Premier Division club try and take a chance on him? Who knows? But everything's gone right for Bray in terms of they've new Astro in down there. I wouldn't agree with the Astros, but once again, if any of them get into the Premier Division, they're going to have to spend a few quid and they're going to have to go full time. Very hard to maintain the Premier Division status with a part-time outfit. Trotted it, done it last year, but I don't think we'll see much anymore. I think the gap is just getting bigger.
Yeah, absolutely huge. Finally, before I let you go, just one thing I'd love to pick your brains on. Obviously, last week we heard the news that Mark Canham is going to be leaving his role within the FAI. There's a lot of talk about should the next person be an Irishman? Should we look overseas? Any thoughts on that? Are you in the running for it?
Definitely not in the running for it, but whoever does get it needs to sit down with the clubs and really follow through on any talks that do happen. The rigmarole that's fallen into the academies and the FAI doing this, and you've heard on other podcasts and through listening about contact hours and all this carry on that goes on, like it's embarrassing to say the least. Like, the National Association should embrace its home league and do everything it can to make it strive and be the best it can be. For it only to turn into a political football at times, it's just wrong. Whoever does come in, I possibly would like to see someone in Ireland who has a fondness for the League of Ireland as well as a good business head for the association, obviously, as well, to drive international standards, but make it be fed from the grassroots. Get everybody around the table as such. I'm sick of hearing that saying, but there does need to be a meeting of the waters here where we can find a path to progress to allow Irish football thrive from the kids at grassroots level all the way through to our international stage.
Yeah, well said.
That's my Paddy, job.
Paddy, great catching up. I'm sure we'll hear you on LOI TV in the not too distant future. So thanks for joining us.
Gentlemen, Ciarán, thanks very much.
Are you enjoying the show? Please consider buying us a beer via our website betweenthestripes.net or head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI. Thank you for your continued support of Between the Stripes.
Yeah, thanks to Paddy for joining us on the show. And we'll hear from Shane Keegan in a little while as well, a double helping of great name guest this week on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Let's go into the first division, Gary, and Treat United 1-0 winners against managerless Athlone Town.
Yeah, well, there's going to be a lot of changes coming in the next few days for Athlone. Probably well needed, you'd have to say. But a good result here for Treaty, which was also kind of required as well. To be anytime Treaty seems to lose a game, it seems to be DEFCON 1 down in Limerick. It's like, you know, an international incident. But look, they're in fifth place at the minute. It was a good win over at Lone, but really and truly at Lone have been poor.
But they are in rag order. They are in rag order on the pitch.
And hopefully a new manager and a new
some job on their hands. They will improve them, but like any sort of a manager going in there and just coaching the team will improve them. There's players to be better than where they are, but my God, it's going to take a while.
I think there's enough talent, you know, individually to we'll say maybe not for it to take that long. I know there's talk about Ian Ryan coming in there, but like we'll say, if you look at some of the players that they've had, they've conceded 18 and only scored 6 goals this season.
I only noticed that today.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Doing a bit of a piece there today. 6 goals.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Christ.
Now, 2 of them against the Town. but like, you know, it is nearly, it's bizarre all the same, like considering, like we'll say, we looked at the players that they have, a couple of players that they brought in, we're like, yeah, they're good, might would add to a team. But it really hasn't turned out that way. And I know they got rid of Dario there a few weeks ago, but the new manager has, as you said, has a big job on his hands to turn it around. But I think there's a kernel there enough to turn it around. The other thing is just on that, if you look at for anybody listening, if you pull up the table there, there's only 6 points between 5th and 9th. You know, that's 2 wins. And like the way that the division is at the minute, you know, we saw Bowes there in the Premier Division. It was, you know, DEFCON 1 again. Put 3 wins together and look, just boys were laughing. It's early enough on in the league to turn around. Now, that's what I'm telling myself for Longford Town.
Keep telling yourself.
Why can't I say that for Athlone Town either?
Mm. Right, Bray Wanderers 4, Kerry FC 2. Bray, a record breaking 7th straight league win. They'd never done that before. An incredible achievement for them. We'll focus on Bray in a second because we have to give them credit for this amazing run they're on. Kerry, I'm like a broken record. The defending is absolutely tragic. They got destroyed down the flanks by Bray the other night. I mentioned that was something I took away from the most recent Bray Longford game. A lot of pace in that Bray team. Some really good ball carriers, and they maximised that as much as they could the other night. They destroyed Kerry down the flanks. And like, if you know, like it's happened, say, twice in the game already. You've got done down the flanks. A cross has come in. You've scored, right? If you're a fullback there on a defence, you say, right, we can't deal with the pace here. So let's just focus on defending the crosses. They couldn't do either. They couldn't defend the wide areas and then they couldn't defend the balls coming in from the wide areas. It was a terrible combination and they were blown apart by this break.
Yeah, they were. I encourage anybody that hasn't seen the highlights of this to go back and just look at the first, like, maybe 25 seconds. because that's when the two goals had already gone in the highlights. But as you said, like, it is tragic defending. Yeah. You get done down the right the first time. You can't stop the cross. The ball is looped over for the first one. It's only 7 or 8 minutes on the clock, I think. And it's just headed a free header at the back post. What's concerning is if you the second goal is actually a considerably worse than the first goal. And I, as I said, encourage anybody to look at the first 20 seconds of these highlights.
You've 20 seconds to spare.
Yeah. The centre back goes out to try and help the left back. He goes out and gets totally caught. He goes right up to way too close. Instead of assisting his defender, he totally takes himself out of the game and gets just ran by. There's players falling across each other. it's just insane stuff. But what's concerning, if you go back just before where that clip part of the clip starts, the reaction for the Kerry players to go, there's a lad running in right at the penalty spot. The Kerry defence can't seem to identify that that player might score a goal or at least get a bloody shot away. It's all so reactive. They're like, what if that winger for Bray beats the two fellas, which he was more than likely to do, beats the two of them and drags and put crosses it in. There's two lads in front of me that have an opportunity to score. And I'm only identifying that when the ball is coming across. Like, that is just not good enough. And, like, they're going to have a horrendous season if that continues going forward. Like, apart from, as you said, getting done for pace or whatever, that's one thing. But to be able to see a lad that's running 5 yards in front of you and go, well, I better get in front of that fella. That not being identified is a serious problem. And I think I saw a couple of mentions on it on Twitter after this game. There was like talk of like this game or this season like being over already for Kerry. I'm not sure I'd go that far a third of the way into the season, but it's getting fairly bloody close to it.
I'm surprised there's not more discomfort down there, to be honest.
I don't know, it's early days
and they're still finding their way, but like,
but no, hold on a minute, just exactly on that, you give out to me probably 3 or 4 pods ago for saying something similar about Derry. It's time to get up and go here. There's no more finding each other. And
this is their what, second year in the league, third year in the league. Like, they're still baby faces. But the issue I have with Kerry, the Kerry team at the minute, they've actually got really good options in the forward line. I keep mentioning this lad Palmer, right? He's a player. Joe Adams has come in. He's added a lot to them. Kelleher's back scores 2 goals straight away. Okwute has actually played very well in recent games, using his pace very well in wide areas. They've got good off. Brookwell's a player I like as well. They've got really good forward options and they're scoring goals, but they are absolutely all over the shop at the back.
All over the shop doesn't even start to describe it.
You'd have to wonder, like, what's going on the training ground that they can't rectify that? Because this is an ongoing theme ever since they came into the league, that they cannot defend for love nor money.
I think a lot of it is, I don't think there's enough of care being given. Like there, if you go back and look at the highlights, because there was one where, I think it was like just inside the second half, like Bray don't score from it, but there's a chance. And the ball kind of like pops up in the midfield, into the defense. They get regain possession, and they're like, "Oh, I'll pass it there." And the ball just like it kind of breaks down, and there's just 3 or 4 lads standing there. One lad steps out and goes to absolutely chop the Bray lad into 40 pieces. Doesn't get there, and it's a free shot on goal that probably should have been crossed in. But I suppose 3-0 up at home to the team towards the bottom of the table, that's absolutely fine. But if you look at that, and that was just after they conceded their third goal, it's just so careless. It's like no one taking responsibility, no ownership, no nothing. I don't know how they're going to get out of that unless there's a bit of leadership at the back, and I don't see any of that going on.
Yeah. As for Bray, look, 7 wins on the trot, it's absolutely remarkable. Who would have thought at this stage of the season that they'd only be 3 points behind Dundalk, and Dundalk still unbeaten at that as well. But some of the young players really, really catching the eye in this Bray team. Ferrazi, as I mentioned, he's only 16. Billy O'Neill, there's been a bit of talk about him for about a year and a half now or more. There's talk that he might end up in Italy or somewhere like that. I actually was impressed with the lad Costello in the couple of games against Longford as well. There's probably other young players there that I'm missing as well. But yeah, look, everyone thought Bray, when they seen all the big names leaving after the playoff final, that it was going to be an absolute rag order year for them. But it's turning into be one of their best seasons in recent memory. Can they maintain it is the question. 7 wins in a row, they'll have every reason to believe that they can keep this level of form up. Wexford nil, UCD 1. This is a fixture that Wexford will want to see the back of, because, of course, they won this game 3-0 on the opening day of the season, only to have it stripped away from them due to the ineligible player. And now they lose to UCD, who were in terrible form. So that's 6 valuable points now they've dropped against UCD this season. A much-needed win for the students.
Yeah, of course. Really important win for them. Gets kind of brushes over the shite from the start of the season. You know, they found it really hard to get going at all. Did a good win against Longford, of course, to back it up again with this win here. I'd say, obviously, like, Wexford will be extremely disappointed considering that they were playing against 10 men before that goal went in.
They were outplayed before and after the race.
They weren't ticking at it. I thought it was quite a poor performance from Wexford. But you're going to have those, like we say, a new manager getting to grips with the side. Dobbsy only coming back as well. I think they'll be more reliable going forward for the rest of the season, but I think it'll
be... I'm not sure on that, to be honest. I think, again, it's a fairly young team. There's lots of young players I could talk about with Wexford. I know the front two is where all the experience really is with Dobbs and Mikey Rowe, but there's lots of young players across the team. I think this is par for the course, and a rookie manager, I think they're probably all learning together. I think the key for Wexford and for Stephen Elliott and how he'll be judged is, can he make them a stronger force at the end of the season? Because we've seen them under James Keddie, where they got to the playoffs and then they just fell at the first hurdle. Can he make them more of a force when it actually matters come the business end of the season? Because if they can have a good run in the playoffs, no one's going to remember a defeat to UCD in May.
Oh, no. No one remembers any of that. Like, that's you don't remember what games you won or lost in October if you're sitting in the playoffs come the end of the season, never mind May. I think, though, you want to be going in the right way, but they have to get there. They have to get into the playoffs. That's the first thing. So this type of, I'm not going to say it's a silly loss or anything like that, but like, you'd want to be picking up something at home against a 10-man UCD team that are only really recovering from the start of the season.
Yeah. Moving on, Cove Ramblers 3, Finn Harps 1. This was a very convincing win from Cove. They're starting to move through the gears now as well.
They are, absolutely. Great set of highlights on YouTube. Really good result. They've kind of put to bed that little ropey run of form that they had a few weeks ago. They've put together a couple of really good results, and this is another one. Harps will be, I think that's probably the type of result that we're expecting from this Harps side. I know this is their first loss in a few. They had a good win a couple of weeks ago against Kerry. Like, this, to score a few goals was good for them, and hadn't lost in a while. But, and obviously the game against Dundalk, of course, great result for them. But I think they're always liable to put in a result like this as well. I think a team like Cove have the individual capability to do something like that, and they just
You mentioned the word individual. Barry Coffey, that's what he was brought to the club to do. He's winning games on his own down there.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, that's going to be the difference maker, in, you know, that individual quality is going to come to the fore. Like, with teams that lower down the table, like, you're going to try and nullify their attacks, and that's where the individual player steps forward and makes the difference there. So really good result for Cove.
And moving on, the game that we were at on Saturday night, that was Longford Town against Dundalk. Dundalk running out 3-0 winners on the night.
Oh, what do you think?
First half, very little between the two teams. Obviously, Dundalk missed an absolute sitter when Gaxet teed up Owen Kenny and he missed from no more than 2 yards out. But aside from that, Dundalk didn't really open up Longford in the first half. You would have been encouraged as a Longford fan. They had a couple of encouraging moments in the game, but overall, it wasn't a great first half from either team. But in the second half, again, I mean, how many times have we spoken about poor second half performances from this Longford team over the last few weeks? They just cannot seem to get into gear after the restart at all. It was such a flat performance. I know Dundalk are the league leaders and all the talent and everything they have in their favour, but there's a way to lose a game of football. And I think this is the second time I've said it in a few weeks about Longford. That's not the way to lose it in front of your own fans. They just seem to really give up after the second goal went in. I think at the Bray game as well, I think I made similar comments. So these performances becoming a little bit too common now from a Longford team who early in the season, let's not forget, were hard to beat and give Dundalk one of their tougher games in Oriel. But this was an absolute walk in the park for Dundalk in the second half.
Yeah, you kind of highlighted it already. I think very important point was half time, two completely different teams came out. I thought Dundalk.
I think you can really pinpoint the reason for Dundalk's change in the second half. A. Durbin shouldn't have played, and Kieran Gilduff said that himself. I saw him going down the tunnel limping like a dog, and I thought, right, he's gone. And next thing he emerged, and he was nowhere near it. They bring on young Andy Parashiv, and all of a sudden they've got that energy in the midfield. So that was a big turning point for Dundalk. If you have any thoughts on Longford and why they were so off colour in the second half compared to the first, I'd love to hear them.
I found it very hard to identify, to be honest. I think the Dundalk team that came out in the second half was extremely strong.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, they didn't change the entire 11. But whatever was said at halftime, whatever tweaks that were made, they started doing things a bit snappier. There was a bit less pricking around the back.
You can see that from the second goal is a class goal from Dundalk.
Ebe's goal.
Ebe's second goal, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was really good. But like, I think someone said it to me, or I might have read it somewhere. The setup for Ebe's first goal was all over the place because it came from a corner. The ball crossed over, headed back, and Ebe is just there on the line to nod it across. I think that was very poor set up.
Vinnie Leonard, who wins the first header, outjumps two Longford Town men at the back post to set up Ebe.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Oh no, I'm not looking for an answer, but like that's the question. Yeah. I did see Ebe's second goal was a great example of probably what Dundalk tried to do maybe five or six times in the game, which was pass it in, lay it off for the 1-2. Ebe just laid it back and it was chopped back or passed back into him, and him on the turn straight looking down at goal. It was a very simple bit of tactical play. Like, it's definitely something that they've worked on because they tried it a few times, as I said, but it really paid off for them. I didn't think Longford thought after the first goal. And obviously the second goal, I thought there was a bit of heart gone out of the performance.
100%, yeah.
And that wasn't ideal, to say the least.
Yeah.
I think they're looking forward. I know we'll come on to Wexford later, the Wexford game later.
Yeah. Just we'll wrap up on this game because we're going to hear from Shane Keegan in a second. But Dean Ebe, I joked last week that, you know, he'd probably get a hat-trick in this game because he so often does against Longford. He's come in for a bit of criticism from Dundalk fans in recent games, those two games where they dropped points. And I've said it to you that I've been at a lot of their games and he hasn't been that involved. And even when he's scoring goals, he's very quiet in the games. But he was absolutely brilliant. It was the Dean Ebe that we know and hate the other night, running the line, holding it up, linking up with players, and then so, so clinical in front of goal. He was absolutely fantastic. I know you said that you thought, who did you say you thought the best player on the pitch was? Daryl Horgan. I thought Dean Ebe was the man of the match.
I thought Darren Horgan was very good throughout the night. But look, like, to be, we'll say, kinder to Longford, they have a lot of, Dundalk have a lot of really, really good players.
Yeah, Gaxa was brilliant as well.
Yeah, and even like, we'll say, Kenny, who should have been sent off, by the way. I know you would never say something like that, but yeah, he should have been sent off. I had a couple of people actually text me.
To be fair, I've actually seen a few Dundalk fans say it to me as well.
Yeah, yeah. And like, was that a 3-0?
That was a 3-0, yeah.
Yeah. Like, silly. No, silly is a mistake. That was stupid. That was pure badness. And I don't care what anybody says. There was absolutely no need to go in like that. It was in Longford Town's own half. There was no, like, it wasn't like a shot or anything like that. Dean O'Shea was, you know, hooking it up the line. There was nothing going to come from it. It was already 3-0. And I think Kilduff made a very good move and immediately taking him off. He should have been sent off, though. And it's not the first time we've talked about Owen Kenny doing something like that. He's gotten sent off before. But yeah, it's something that he needs to get rid of out of his game. But obviously that made no bearing on the game whatsoever, apart from his shock and miss in the first half.
Anyway, look, I did speak to Kieran Kilduff after the game again. I think he carries himself so well. Really doing a really, really good job with Dundalk, has to be said. I'm just going to bring you a brief snippet from this. The full interview is on the Between the Stripes Members Club. So if you want to hear this, go to buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI/members membership, and you can sign up there and listen to this interview in full. But here's just what Kieran Kilduff had to say about Dean Ebbe's performance on Saturday night.
Dean Ebbe was brought to the club to score big goals and be the big player in big moments, and he was tonight. Two really clinical finishes. I know he came under a little bit of pressure, a little bit of criticism in recent games from some supporters, but that's kind of the life of a big number nine. When you sign, you've got to deal with that pressure, and he certainly did tonight.
It comes with the territory, doesn't it? I think he had 4-4 at one stage. You don't score for 4, and it's, you know, yeah. And all of a sudden, you know, he's 6 for the season, and you know, if he gets a couple more before the halfway point, he'll be in double figures, so we'll be delighted. So now look at it, own Dean, you know, we've probably challenged him a little bit in the last week or two to go. You know, we know teams maybe now are trying to frustrate us a little bit more. Can you be more creative? Can you just be more alive in the box? And I think even his first goal, I was probably happy with his first and his second. His second was a prettier goal, but you're looking for scrappy 1 second phase off a corner. You know, he's reacted, he's alive in the box. And yeah, like buses, then once you get one, the second one's never too far away. And yeah, we're delighted with him. He's come up with some big goals for us there tonight.
And from Kieran Kilduff, we go to another Dundalk man of sorts. It was a bit of an ill-fated spell for Shane Keegan at Oriel Park, but he was there, and he's a man that keeps a very close eye on what's happening in the First Division, given all the clubs he's managed in that division. So he's going to give us a bit of a rundown and his thoughts on what has happened in the second tier of Irish football so far this season. I'm delighted to say we're joined on the show this week by Shane Keegan. Shane, good to chat to you.
Kieran, how are you getting on?
Too bad. Look, Shane, we have you on to talk a little bit about the First Division. I know you've been watching plenty of it this season. Just before we get stuck into that, there's obviously a couple of vacant manager's jobs at the moment. Any chance we're going to see Shane Keegan on a sideline soon?
No, unfortunately not. The current situation probably doesn't allow for it, Kieran. It's nice to feel wanted at times, and I have had one or two conversations around just people just sussing out, you know, it would it be a possibility, or, you know, would it be something I'd be interested in? And to be fair, as I say, the kind of my current circumstances kind of just mean you dismiss it offhand before it becomes too much more of a conversation. But look, thankfully, still doing a lot of media around it and all that, so you're still absolutely keeping your eye very much in. And like a fella spying on his ex-girlfriend's Facebook page, I'm still looking at Cove on a very, very regular basis, because I really enjoyed my time down there, and I think they've got an excellent squad together this year. And I'd still, I suppose, big enough turnover now at this stage, but say, you know, Dale Holland, Jason Abbott, fellas like that I'd still have a huge amount of time for. So that is the game I do tend to find myself bouncing between. I'll be dual screening most Friday evenings with a Premier Division game and a Cove game.
Very good. We'll get to the Rams in a second, but I think we would have probably broke the story earlier in the year that you certainly had discussions with Athlone earlier in the year, but going in there on some sort of a basis. Obviously, Dario has since left the club. It's been a really poor start to the season for them. I think there's going to probably be news out of Athlone later this week, or certainly in the coming weeks anyway. It's intriguing, really, Athlone, the structures they've had over the last few years. It looks like there could be a complete change of direction coming now. Can you tell us anything more about maybe what's maybe going to be happening over there over the next while?
Yeah, look, I don't think I have any more insight maybe than what's out there. I probably, if you'd asked a month ago, I probably would have known quite a bit more than the general public. But at this stage, you know, thanks to a few that have been on the story, the general public is pretty much up to speed. I was first, I suppose, informed of a potential takeover about 2 months ago. I would have a contact, I suppose, from my time involved in the league, who has been performing a kind of a consultancy role, maybe is probably the best way to phrase it, in terms of the new owners coming in. So he would have given me a heads up on this quite early, with the view to me possibly being involved in something there. Initially, to be honest, he would have looked for to see would I have got involved with the club straight away while that was still going on in the background. And my take on it all the time was, you know, certainly in terms of what was currently there, no. You know, the club is, as you say, it's got a strange setup. Look, I just think it needs a clean house. I think it needs a clean out. If it's going to go in the right direction, it needs a clean out. If and when that happened, whether there'd be potential to get involved at that stage, I'm not 100% sure. As you said, most recent stories seem to be that they maybe have somebody ready to go. So that will be interesting to see if the new owners have somebody ready to hit the ground running. But like, it's a club that has potential, Kieran. It really does. You know, it's got a lot of things going for it, but I just think, unfortunately, the structure and some of the people involved maybe over the last few years has held it back.
Mm. Let's talk about Cove, though, because it still brings a smile to your face every time we mention them. I suppose, like, a lot of pressure on them this season in terms of the investment. I know they've had some changes behind the scenes as well, but after probably a modest enough start, they seem to have clicked into an extra gear or two in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, it probably got off to a very good start, then had the blip of, like, I think three defeats in a row, I think it was. Possibly, now it was a tough enough run of games, in fairness. And then it bounced back really well. And they bounced back here at just the right time, because they've bounced back with some really good results just around the same time that they had the kind of bad news off the field. And I thought, I was kind of thinking to myself, you know, three defeats and now this breaks, you know, there's the potential for all this to go snowball very quickly. And look, Kieran, like, if the money that was coming in from the previous investors is no longer coming in, well, then all of a sudden the club has to learn how to wipe its own arse again, in that, you know, the gate receipts need to match the outgoings, which means they need strong gate receipts. Now, I have since heard of new potential investors coming in at Cove, and that they would potentially fill the gap that the previous investors have left. So maybe everything will be fine down there from a financial point of view. But I do think the squad they've assembled is absolutely brilliant. And just as I'm talking to you here, I'm literally going back into my texts. As I say, Jason Abbott would have been my captain at the club, and it'd be a guy I'd have a huge amount of time for. And I'm looking here, what's the date in my text? The 16th of November. Myself and Abbo were texting, and at the time I said to him, and again, like, I'm even looking at my wording, which is why I'm so shocked, I said to him, this may be somewhat aspirational, but all of these players are based in the southeast and are currently probably available for the club to go after. And if I read down through the list, like, they've pretty much got them all, like Shane Griffin, Jack Doherty, John O'Donovan, Cian Bargary, Niall O'Keefe, Cian Murphy, Barry Coffey, Shane Griffin II. The only names I see on the list that I sent him across that they didn't end up getting was Leo Gaxa, David Hurley, who I thought might leave but didn't leave, and Killian Cantwell, who I thought might leave Bray but didn't leave. But they've hoovered up all the rest. I mean, it's a really, really outstanding squad to put together. So I think they're going to be right in the hunt. Obviously, Dundalk are looking strong. But I don't know. I think this Cove, if they have no issues off the field, Kieran, I think they could push Dundalk all the way. I really do.
Even ahead of Bray, who have obviously won their last seven matches, would you have Cove as Dundalk's main challenger?
I would, yeah, I would. The Bray's current form is outstanding, absolutely outstanding. But I'd be amazed if they can keep it going. I don't see, maybe I'll be proved wrong, but I don't see the same quality in that Bray squad as I would in the Cove one. In terms of proven quality, you could argue there's more potential in the Bray squad, and they're delivering on that potential. They're delivering it on at the moment. Like, geez, I'd love to see the average age of that team at the moment. Like, there's so many teenagers, and like, it's guys in their early 20s are nearly the senior statesmen in the team, which is amazing. But you know, with youth like that, you know, consistency is, there's probably still a question mark over consistency. Like Ferrazzi at the moment in night, Billy O'Neill is a young fella that I think is absolutely super. I've watched him for a while now. I think he's got massive potential. And look, they do still have Killian Cantwell. Killian, it's hard to believe. Killian is a year younger than Mikey and Shawnee. So Killian is 30. Killian played Kennedy Cup for me 18 years ago. So an awful long time. And I thought he'd leave when everything started to kind of crumble around him and Cole left and, you know, various different people were leaving. I thought he'd be out of Dodge fairly quickly as well. But he, you know, they obviously persuaded him to stay. I was surprised, but it's looking like a smart move on his behalf now. He would be very much, I would imagine, be the leader within that dressing room, you know.
Yeah, as you said, it's a very youthful Bray side. That's not unique to Bray. I think that's been the really refreshing thing looking at the First Division this season. There's so many good young players. Like, I'm talking about them every week here, but Caelum Harran, it catches my eye every time I see him. There's a few other players. You mentioned Ferrazzi there, the young lad O'Neill. There's a few players I could probably pick out at every club. The young lad Palmer down in Kerry. Some serious talent coming through the First Division at the minute.
Yeah, and listen, that's what the division is there for. It really, really is. You know, you look at the amount of talent either in our Premier Division or players that have gone across the water who cut their teeth at that level. And, you know, that's what it's for. Some fellas come into the First Division at 18 years of age, and they're still there, you know, at 27 years of age. But then you have the others who, you know, and listen, you're watching First Division so long, I'd say at this stage you're probably able to tell almost on first viewing, you know, is this a guy who's still going to be in the First Division in 10 years' time, or is he going to have Premier Division titles under his belt in 10 years' time, or is he potentially going to be wearing an Ireland senior jersey in 10 years' time? But there is a great opportunity to catch them before the rocket, I suppose, kind of takes off for a lot of these kids.
Thanks for the reminder about how much First Division football I've watched over the last 10 or 15 years. On Dundalk, they are still unbeaten. There's been some weeks we haven't been that impressed with them, but in recent weeks they look like they're maybe letting the handbrake off a little bit. They had a very good second half showing against Longford, albeit a poor Longford side the other day. But I think overall, you'd have to be very, very impressed. And look, you're someone that knows how difficult it is to manage at that level. Kieran Kilduff, his first taste of men's League of Ireland football, and he's doing a stellar job there at Dundalk.
Listen, Kieran, he's doing a brilliant job. And like, sometimes it almost goes unnoticed. Well, you know, Dundalk, they've come down. You know, you think of the Dundalk of old, and therefore you think it's inevitable that they go straight back up. This was far from inevitable. Like, when they got relegated, you know, there was parts of me thinking, these boys might have to get ready for 3-4 years back at First Division level and rebuild the whole club, because obviously things off the field weren't exactly rosy either. So they weren't. And look, Killer did a brilliant job in the women's game last year. I said almost instantly when the Dundalk job came up that I thought it was an absolute no-brainer that he was going to end up as manager there. And that's how it played out. But he's been pretty much foot perfect from his signings to how he has them playing, to how he's handled any of the media duties that he's had, anything like that. He's done a terrific job. Like I say, I think the signings have been so clever. You know, they needed goals. He went and got Dean Ebbe. Probably even before that, to go forwards, persuading Daryl to stay, you know, was a massive, massive part of things, because that all of a sudden people look and go, you know, maybe they are going to be a decent side. But then some of his under the radar signings, I mean, you're probably aware, I've been singing Ed Irvine's praises a long, long time, and I'd argue maybe he hasn't fully yet delivered on the potential that I saw there early on. But yet he's rock solid in a team that's top of the First Division at the moment, you know, week in, week out, a main body for them. I think Conor O'Keefe was a clever signing, so it was. I had Chief at Wexford, really good head on his shoulders. We'll give him that other bit of leadership as well. And having played under Caulfield for the last couple of years, will now be extremely well drilled defensively. And then another one that really, really caught my eye when I was managing Cove was Gaxa. Gaxa gave us all kinds of headaches when we come up against him. He's just that little bit different. And again, I expected more of him last year, to be honest, and he didn't really deliver on it, but he is now.
Yeah, he's been absolutely fantastic the last couple of weeks, I have to say. Again, you're someone that knows the kind of the run, how to run a League of Ireland club as well. I was talking about with Paddy Kavanagh earlier on. I was just looking at some of the figures from Sligo's AGM last night and the volume of money just to try and stay in the Premier Division. These 10 teams that are in the First Division now, even Dundalk, if they go up, it is going to be an absolutely massive challenge to re-establish yourself at that level. The gap in funding between the two leagues, it's never been bigger.
Yeah. Oh, listen, absolutely colossal. As you say, like who comes down? Like you're talking about at the moment, Sligo being favourites to come down. Like Sligo are off the field a million miles ahead of Dundalk. So they are. So it's, yeah, look, the gap is huge. And obviously with the new funding model from UEFA and how, you know, the extra awards that are there for being in the Premier Division, the longer you're out of it, the less your chances ever become of ever getting back into it. So, look, I think for Dundalk, it is absolutely imperative that they try and bounce straight back up, and then they need to figure out a way, you know, what Sligo, I know it's not new, like we saw the numbers again in it was Jessica Farry's tweets that I was reading. You see the numbers that she put out, and they kind of astound you when you see how much fundraising and how well they do it. And yet it's not new, like if you actually, they're doing that a long, long time. I don't know. Do Dundalk have the potential to do that? They're certainly in a different place now. They're not just going to be able to rely on, you know, one benefactor. Now, that's probably a good thing for them, the way the benefactors have been going for them there over the last few years, my time there included. But yeah, it's not going to be easy. But yet, it's obvious that's where they will feel they need to get back to as quickly as possible.
Yeah, Shane, great catching up with you. Thanks so much for your time. We'll speak again.
Here, no bother at all.
Yeah, so a very good result for Dundalk on Saturday night. And I'm delighted to say we've got a Dundalk supporter joining us on the pod this week to play in the Predictions League. That is Daniel Shields. Just to give you the lowdown on what happened last week, we were joined by a Pats fan. That was Dylan Short. And Dylan, once again, made sure the listeners came out on top, Gary. Dylan gathered up 10 points to move the listeners onto 71 points. He got two correct scores last week, Cove Harps and Galway Drogheda. So well done to him. I picked up 6 points. I only got one correct score. That was Rovers Shells. And you got 5 points. They were all correct results. No correct scores for you. So league table is like this. I'm just 1 point behind you now. I'm on 48. You're on 49. Listeners running away with it on 71. And is Daniel the place for the listeners this week? We'll start with his team, Dundalk. And they go to Athlone, who could or could not have new managers and owners by then. But Dundalk go to Athlone, and you'd have to fancy them very, very strongly here.
Yeah, I think so. I can't, like, we saw Athlone quite recently in the bank holiday a couple of weeks ago. Nothing to be feared by them. A lot of crazy decision making and poor defending on top of that as well. And from what I saw the other night of Dundalk, I think to be, if they have a poor night,
should be licking their lips here.
Well, yes, but even if they have a poor night, I think Dundalk or Athlone will give Dundalk enough chances.
Yeah.
They'll create enough shite themselves that Dundalk have the capacity and individual ability to punish Athlone. I'm going to go for a 2-0 win to Dundalk.
Yeah, that's what Daniel's going for as well. The one sticky thing about this fixture is the fact that they will have new owners by the time this game is played. That'll give everyone a lift, and perhaps a new manager will go in. I just think whoever it is, even if it's Mourinho, he won't be able to iron out all the issues in this team quick enough for a challenge like this against Dundalk. I'm going to go for a 2-0 win to Dundalk as well. UCD against Kerry.
Very hard to see.
We kind of spoke a lot about the disappointment for Wexford against UCD. We didn't really speak much about UCD. Again, it's another good result that's come on a grass pitch. They had their best, probably one of their better performances in Longford. Mm-hmm. They had a very good performance in Ferry-Carrick. I don't know what nick this UCD pitch is in now after all the remedial work, but this Kerry team, no organisation at the back. This is a great chance for UCD to pick up a win here.
Oh yeah, I can't say anything else, to be quite honest. I think the number of issues that Kerry have at the back can't be resolved in a week. As I mentioned, the lack of leadership at the back, the lack of taking ownership of situations, and the simple lack of being able to identify danger.
Mm.
It's the holy trinity of shite defending. I can't see how they get even a point out of this game. Unless I can only see a 0-0 as the only hope for Kerry, to be quite honest.
It'll be three UCDs and ineptness or anything like.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for a 3-0 win to UCD.
I'm going to go 2-1 to UCD and Daniel going 1-0 to UCD. Cove against Bray. What a game this will be. Dundalk will be hoping this is a draw, of course.
Humdinger. Really, this is a real test for Bray. I'm not saying like they've already beaten Cove this season, but that was in Cove's kind of
ropey spell.
Mm. Yeah,
you really need to expand your vocabulary.
What did I say?
Shite.
Okay, Shakespeare. Does a bit of broadcasting and starts telling people about their vocabulary. Yeah. It's going to be a real great. Hopefully, it's a great game. Mm. Obviously, neither team will want it to be a great game. Just they want the win. But I think the way Bray have been scoring goals has been insane. They've been doing what they need to do in some games and opening up in other games. They had a great win against UCD, 2-0 at home. They managed to put four past Kerry, not a great feat. They put four past Longford.
Not a great feat.
Not a great feat, but they're still churning it out. Do you know what I mean? They're doing what they need to do at all times. And this is off the back of a 5-0 beating. You know, if you think back to that game up in Ballybuffet.
Yeah, Jesus, that's gone from my memory altogether.
Exactly. It's like they've all had brain transplants.
I am fairly certain Bray's next game after this is a trip to Oriel. This is real acid test stuff. I think the experience in the Dundalk and Cove teams might just be a bit too much for Bray. I'm going to go 2-1 to Cove here.
I'm going to follow you on that.
Okay, Daniel going 1-1. Of course he is.
Look, I think he's hoping against hope, but I'm not sure. You know what? Let me follow him instead of you.
You're going 1-1?
1-1, yeah.
Finn Harps against Treaty.
Tough old game here. Really hard one to pick out. I think on that poor enough pitch. I think
Harps can bounce back here.
Yeah, so can I. So do I. But Treaty are still they're still scoring some goals. They're not conceding. I'm gonna go for a 1-1 draw here.
Okay, Daniel going 0-0. I'm going to go 1-0 to Finn Harps. Longford Town against Wexford on the Saturday night.
Longford Town are going to turn it around. They like playing against Wexford. They didn't like it a few weeks ago in the refix game.
Start of the month.
But you made a very good point talking about that game. Wexford weren't great.
It wasn't a 3-1 scoreline. There wasn't much between the two teams. But
exactly.
I think Wexford needs to bounce back after a poor result against UCD, and to be brutally honest, Longford's the team everyone wants to play in the division right now, maybe aside from Kerry. So I can only see a Wexford win. I'm going to go 2-0.
No. A win for... Sorry, 2-0 to Wexford?
Yeah.
Okay. Don't see that. I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to Town.
2-1 win to the Town. Daniel going 1-0 to Wexford. Right, into the Premier Division we go, and we've got Pats against Galway.
There's a lot of tasty games on this week.
There's some great games in the Premier, yeah.
Yeah. I would have a concern with Pats.
So would I.
They're not taken. But, you know, a lot of people have said, you know, they haven't been playing great, but they're still third in the table, blah, blah, blah. But they've only won one game in five.
Mm.
And that was against Cork.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, that's not exactly a
championship winning form.
No, Galway doing a bit better. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw here.
I'm going to go 2-1 to Galway.
Ginny Mac, okay.
Daniel going 2-0 to Pats. So, range of opinions there. Bowes against Waterford. Can Bowes back it up? That is the age-old question. They've been doing all right the last few weeks.
And they bet the piss out of Waterford earlier on this season.
Yeah.
A game that I don't... Bowes won 3-1, but still probably didn't deserve to win. Or 3-0. This game is up in Daly Mount. Yeah, I think they can do it. I think there's some good vibes around the place. They're rediscovering the identity of some type of team that wants to win football matches. I'm going to go for... I don't know. I think Podge Armand is going to score.
Yeah,
I'm going to go 2-2.
I'm going to go 1-1.
Okay.
I can see Waterford taking the lead and Bowes getting another late one.
Okay.
Daniel going 1-1 as well. Derry against Shelburne. Last time Shells were up in the Brandywell, we all know what happened. They definitely get a result here, by the way.
I think so, yeah. I don't think it's going to be an... Do you know what? Why not 4 in a row, 2-2?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just still so unimpressed at Derry. They're really, you don't know what Derry you're going to get at all. You know, they had a really good win up in Eamon DC Park a couple of weeks ago. They followed that up with a good win against Sligo and then shit the togs in Waterford. They need to grab a hold of their defense and Maher altogether. I think
they need to win this game mentally to erase what went on last game of last season. I think this could be a big.
I don't think they're ready for it.
Yeah, I don't think they are either.
No.
I know a lot of these players weren't there, but I think just everyone at the club needs to banish.
But last season. Yeah, but it's like what I do be bleating on about against Real Madrid. Like I know they are out of the Champions League. But the pedigree they have, it's like you wake up in the morning, you're a Real Madrid player, I'm going to win the Champions League today. Built into their DNA when you put on that white shirt. I can't see how... I just don't see it. I know it's not the same, obviously, for Derry, but I know, as you said, that a lot of the players aren't there. But I still think there's a stink around the place. For when Shells come to town. So I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw just because I think Shells are still leaky at the back.
Yeah, good shout. I like that. I'm going 1-1. Daniel going 2-1 to Shells. Nobody backing Derry to win there. Sligo Rovers against Drogheda. You'd look at this and you'd say top against, are they bottom or second bottom?
Bottom.
So you'd think open and shut case, but I don't think it'll just be that simple. Nothing is in this league.
No, nothing is simple. You don't know what's going to happen. Like we're bollocks as for even having a prediction league, really. I do.
In saying that, I'm still going for a draw to win.
Yeah, absolutely. So am I. But I think it's going to be a lot tighter. I think it's going to be a bit of a sad case for Sligo. You know, Osamiget handles the ball or some shite.
Bore statement.
Another bore statement, absolutely. I haven't had one of them in a while. Maybe they took our advice. It was like, if you're a fan group, you don't need to release a statement. I'm going to go for a 1-0 win to Drogheda.
I'm going to go 2-1 to Drogheda and Daniel going 1-1. Cork City against Shamrock Rovers. These two, they've only played these two.
Rovers.
They only played. Cork City and Rovers, they only played a few games. That was very one-sided. This is in Turner's Cross, though. Hard to see past Rovers.
It is hard to see past Rovers, but I was disappointed with some of the defending. Now, I know Shelburne are a different animal that can punish your mistakes or indecision. I do believe, though, that Shamrock Rovers have enough quality in the latter third. As you know, I'm not part of the Jack Byrne cult, but the fact that he's playing, he does... keep the game moving. It's good to have him back for Shamrock Rovers. Healy's playing well as well.
I'm going to go for a 2-0 win to Shamrock Rovers.
I'm going to go 2-1 just because of the fact, as you said, they're making some silly mistakes at the back that might give Cork a chance, but I think Rovers will win this. It probably could be more than 2-1 as well. Daniel thinks it will be. He's going 3-0 to Shamrock Rovers. So that just brings us to the hotline, which is going to be very brief this week, and that's my fault. I didn't put out the tweet until late, so we don't have a massive uptake this week, but we had our busiest one ever last week, so... we're due a little break. Right, lads, who's winning it then? Every week last year.
Will you leave us alone, will you?
On a serious note, who do you fancy at this moment in time?
Drogheda.
To win the league?
Yeah, why not? He'll ask me again next weekend. We can say something else.
I don't know.
Just it'd be class for the league, though, wouldn't it?
Oh, the unreal, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think... I was going to say even Dundalk, even the town of Dundalk wouldn't mind. But they're obviously...
They could have a joint celebration.
With Liverpool, yeah, absolutely.
No, the First Division and the Premier Division, if they both win it.
Okay. It'd be great for Loud, all right.
It'd be less cringy than lads kissing fake Premier League trophies, kissing TV screens.
And televisions.
Sam, what player has impressed both of you most live this season? So in the flesh. Have you been to too many Premier games?
No, I haven't been.
All my Premier games have been draw at the best. Caelum Harnett in the First Division is the one that caught my eye the most. I think I mention him every week like I'm his agent.
Honest God, lad, he should be getting a cut of the wages at this point.
Well, as Shane Keegan sadly reminded me in that interview, I've watched a lot of First Division football over the last 10 or 15 years. I've got an eye for players at this level, unfortunately.
Yeah. Look, I was impressed. It's very easy to say Daryl Horgan, but we'll say not an experienced player.
I wasn't overly impressed with him in the first few weeks, but in the last few games, he's really come to life. Gaxa.
Yeah, well, he had that super red card down in...
Oh, yeah. Karate kick.
Yeah. Decapitate a lad. There's been no real standout player. Like, obviously, I've watched a lot of Longford Town games. I've been really impressed with Aaron Dorn.
Of course you'd say that.
Well, yeah, you'd say
let's,
that.
Let's
well.
Just remember you included a Longford Town player in the team of the season last year when
Town Dean O'Shea. Ninth. Yeah, he was class.
Right, okay. Ronan, should TG Cahir show First Division games?
No.
Go on, take it up there.
I think when you had the head of sport for TG Cahir a few years ago, you made some very good points. They have a little section that they want to operate in, which is the Women's League. I think that's great promotion for the Women's Premier Division. I don't think the First Division... is something that they need to get into. Also, what pitches would you have it in? You know,
some of the games that the women's matches are shown in wouldn't exactly be fit for TV either. But I think the main thing here that makes this a complete non-runner is simply the viewing figures. You know yourself as someone that's involved in LOI TV. The difference between the audiences for the Premier Division and the First Division, there's a huge difference in the audiences. That game we did the weekend, Longford Dundalk, I don't know how many tuned in, but I would imagine that's probably the biggest, most streamed game we'll get this season because of the Dundalk contingent. You even look at the highlights.
High quality production.
Of course. Even look at the highlights on FEI TV. Look at the number of views and more so the number of comments the Premier Division videos get compared to the First Division. If you get 3 or 4 comments on the First Division videos, you're doing well. Whereas you could have 30 to 40 in the Premier Division games. So I think it's just a complete non-runner. And I think with LOI TV, there's absolutely no need for it. But I do appreciate the sentiment, Ronan. And finally, Matty, how long can Bray hold on to Ferrazai and Billy O'Neill?
Did you mention that Ferrazai is only 16 at the minute?
Yeah, well, he could go to Europe, couldn't he?
He could. The
brother's in Italy still, isn't he? I think I've seen him doing a few old TikTok lives or something.
I'm not sure it's suitable to go at such a young age.
I think they'll be able to hold on to the two of them for the rest of the season.
Mm.
Obviously, it's in their interest, but like, look, I could be wrong,
but I get the impression the Bray model seems to be around trying to sell a few young players on.
They have a model, do they?
that's the feeling. I feel like they're gone down that route, to be honest.
Okay, fair enough.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they do move on. But look, that was the hotline. As I said, it was short and sweet this week, mainly due to my fault. But we'll have another one next week. I thought that was a very good pod, if I don't say so myself. great interviews with Paddy Cav and with Shane Keegan. Good to have Gary's input as ever. And look, let's wait and see what happens at Athlone over the next few days. One thing is for sure, whatever happens in either division, you'll hear about it here on next week's show. We are the podcast that champion the Premier Division and the First Division in equal measure. So I hope you've enjoyed this week's Between the Stripes LOI podcast from myself, Kieran Burke, from Gary Riley, and from our sponsor, Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lighting, and AV solutions. Get out there and enjoy your game this weekend. The weather looks like it's going to be cracking. But until then, we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening. Check out betweenthestripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.